Welcome to the Media Cat Magazine podcast. I'm your host, Mike Pigger, editor at the magazine. And today we have a special podcast on our July theme of fame and attention, where I'm handing over control of the pod to regular Media Cat contributor, author, and co-founder of Genius Steel's Faris Yacoub. In this discussion, Faris is interviewing Andy Pearson, VP of Creative at Liquid Death. So that's enough from me. And without further ado, over to Faris.
Hello, and welcome to the Media Cat Magazine podcast, an audio extension of a digital magazine about media, advertising, marketing, culture, and everything in between. I am today's humble host, Faris, and author of best-selling advertising classic, Paid Attention, which is not solely self-indulgent self-promotion, but is rather germane to the conversation, because today we'll be talking about attention and fame, two closely related concepts that have become a lot more salient for some reason, maybe my book, who knows, in the advertising industry in the last few years. Specifically of late, there's been quite a lot of professorial pundit polarized discourse about a nature of a particular brand that's made itself inarguably famous in a very few short years. And I thought I would just, go directly to the source. And like their source for their mountain sparkling water, I thought I'd just talk to Liquid Death directly. And so I'm absolutely delighted to introduce our guest today, Andy Pearson, ultra runner, lovely human being. I got to meet him randomly in New Zealand a long time ago. And most recently, having created a very popular board game, card game, VP of Creative at Liquid Death. Andy, how are you?
I'm doing well, thank you.
I am delighted to hear that, sir. Where are you currently?
I'm up in Wrightwood, California, up in the mountains outside of Los Angeles. Yep.
Beautiful, beautiful. I'm in Chattanooga. We'll meet again next time in Queenstown. Okay, so thanks so much for agreeing to do this. It's a lot of fun, hopefully, and everybody's very interested in your brand. And I wanted to talk to you about how you think about marketing, creative, fame, attention, and how those things drive, growth, and how your business has grown so much. I guess the first thing I wanted to talk about a little bit is that Liquid Death doesn't tend to do a lot of media buys or significant media buys. Is that fair? Is that right?
That's correct, yeah.
So you tend to focus your budget on production and then use own media channels for deployment, and kind of PR is a big part of that. How do you think about paid media? Do you use it at all? Is there any bit of it?
Yeah, we certainly are doing things in paid, but from the beginning we realized that, well, one, people hate advertising and marketing, and so instead of advertising and marketing, can we make stuff that people genuinely love and want to interact with, want to watch? And so, as you kind of said, can we take that money that we would have spent on media and instead push it into making more content that people love? And kind of through that process, we have, as you said, created our own media channels, essentially, we have 9 million combined followers across Instagram and TikTok. And so when we push something out, we often are doing it in a way that is going to automatically reach an audience that we've built over time, and we've created our own media. So a lot of times we look at it as we are both the brand, the company, the marketing agency, the production company, and our own media channel or our own influencer. And so we actually have now started getting a lot of brands coming to us wanting to work together because we've become influencers. The brand has become an influencer as well and is willing to kind of collab with other people.
It's kind of a fascinating idea. You do a lot of interesting collabs. We'll get to that because I do want to talk about them, especially the new thing you announced, I think today, the golfing collaboration with Bad Birdie. I get the idea. You mentioned at the beginning, your kind of macro insight that people hate ads and marketing. Is that kind of the overwhelming kind of audience insight that you guys bring to the kind of work you do?
Yeah, I mean, it's not an insight, it's the truth. It's like, I think if people in marketing acknowledged that we're generally making things that people hate, suddenly, if you're starting from that conceit,
yeah,
how does that alter the thing that you're making in the first place? Right. And I think too often we think that we're surgeons in an ER saving lives, and the thing we're doing is the most important thing in the world. Right. And if you step back and kind of look at it in a skeptical sense, you might start making work that's actually more interesting to more people and more fulfilling to yourself and other people as well.
Does your experience working in advertising for kind of established big brands directly inform some of that, I guess, thinking? Because whilst at some level, all of your work feels like it deeply understands and satirizes advertising, I don't think satire is exactly what it is. In some ways, like everything starts out as there's a joke somewhere, like Ogilvy said, you know, make your thinking as funny as possible. But your stuff isn't like just postmodern silliness. It's got always a serious point that lands with something fresh and interesting each time.
I like that you say that, because I do always say internally, I think the best things that we make that often perform the best have a really like a cultural critique hidden deep inside of it that on the surface isn't there. But when you dig into, like when we did the Tony Hawk Bloodboard thing, mm-hmm. that was kind of this commentary on celebrity endorsements and how they're all bullshit, right? And so how can we prove that the celebrity believes so much in the product that they're willing to give us his own, you know, pint of blood, right? And so everything has a little bit of that like cultural insight. And so I think I it's cool to hear you say that, because it's definitely, there's a lot of satire, but there's also cultural commentary. There's a lot of kind of Dada postmodern silliness involved. There's a lot of things all kind of mixed up. And when you look at the stuff that I love the best that we've done and that has done the best, I don't think you can quite quantify what the thing we're doing is. We just shot something last week where I hopped on a call with all the actors that were about to come in on set. And I explained like the four levels of humor that we were going to be working with the next day, because you kind of have to dissect all the different things that we're doing simultaneously to understand how to pull it off and kind of stick the landing on it.
So, I mean, there's lots of parts of your marketing operation. I think the Death Machine is your creative function, I guess. That's your...
The production company, yeah.
Right, absolutely. So I wanted to ask about that. I mean, how much production is actually done in-house? Is it all you guys and you know?
Pretty much 100% at this point.
Right.
Yeah, we have our team of producers, and we have a great roster of kind of co-conspirators that we pull in on every production. And then we've kind of taken to really directing it ourselves now. I either direct or co-direct with my EP out of convenience, which sounds weird, but it was like the more we were doing stuff, the easier it was if we just did it ourselves, and we could do it faster and cheaper and have more creative control over it.
Yeah, it seems like a very kind of modern model, rather than just building an in-house agency, having a creative perspective kind of from the very outset, right? Because in some ways the brand is incredibly creative, but also it's at core a purpose brand. I don't want to say purpose language like an annoying way, but it is, right? Like that's what it actually is.
Yeah. And it's funny you say that too, because I remember when I first started, and when I first started, it was literally a couple of us. And I was asked, he was like, hey, do you want this to be like an internal agency, like with a name and stuff like that? And I was just like, no, I want this to be Liquid Death. This is just who we are. This is all it is. And we're all on the same team. And I understand the need for internal agencies to be branded as their own thing and feel like they have their own autonomy. But for me, it was really important that from the jump, it's all Liquid Death. We're all on the same team together. And there's not this like marketing's over here and they are the cool kids doing this thing. Honestly, when I joined, I was like, I've never been the least cool person in an organization ever. I was like, I only have one tattoo compared to everyone else. I have the least number of tattoos in the entire company. So I think that's a really important part of this, is that we're all genuinely just playing together. You know,
I mean, I love that. I mean, it must be easier then to work kind of like you've got one vision holistically as a company and you can operate that way. You speak to the agility of that to some degree. I think you mentioned once considering an RFP for an agency and then coming up with a taste test idea in 15 minutes instead and going, oh, I'll just do that and it'll be great.
Yeah.
I mean, it must make things much faster, obviously. Like,
Yeah, exactly. We couldn't do the stuff we did if we weren't just willing to say, yes, we like that idea, go. And I think that's, you know, just coming from, as you said, the agency world, it's like you spend months and months worrying about the right strategy and about this execution and going back and forth on the script. And, you know, a lot of times we'll sell in ideas to ourselves or to partners, and we don't have a script until like a lock script until sometimes like a couple of days before. I'm like, oh shoot, we got to write the script for this. But because I think that thing is very freeing, because it means like, cool, can we all agree that this is a great idea? One, and then can we agree that two, we feel confident enough we can make this hilarious and entertaining? And so if it just is a lot easier to work with people when you're not so like mired in the details, because that's what the production process is once you get in the details, that's when you're making all like the little tweaks and creative decisions and dialing in the script. But you know, the creative process lasts all the way into the edit and can totally take a different left-hand turn in the edit once you get it there. So I think we don't ever want to have like a final answer. And I think, how many times have you, I know personally, got into an edit for something that you had the script, everyone agreed was this was the best it can be. And then you get in the script or you get an edit and you're like, oh man, this sucks. And there's no way to save it. And
it's on point, but it's not right.
Right. And so I think if you allow every piece of the process to be developing in real time, it will ultimately build up to the best creative product. The same way, like, think about, again, we always make analogies to SNL, but I think it's a parallel in a lot of ways. Like, you're always constantly writing and writing up until the last minute until the thing is on air and fixing that thing. And it's not like they don't write something on Monday and they're like, well, we're done. See you next Monday, right? It has to be kind of a constant iteration creatively.
Which is sort of difficult with the waterfall process of, you know, an agency structure where the client signed off on the script and therefore you're sort of beholden to the, you know, the agreements that you've made. How famous is Liquid Death? And how do you think about that? And do you measure it in any way? Or
I think we're pretty famous at this point. I mean, how famous? Yeah, I mean,
I mean, do you measure brand awareness, for example, as some sort of proxy?
Yeah, I mean, we certainly have our research that we do, and you know, we're looking at the data and, you know, determining, you know, kind of plotting future where we're going. I think we're hitting the mark on a lot of the stuff we want to be doing. And then, you know, in terms of famous, I think there's also different ways to measure that. I think we've grown in ways that are outsized to even the audience. And so what I mean by that is, I think strategically we've become friends and gotten ourselves in the right places where we are known by famous people as well. And thus that opens a lot of doors. So we have a lot of celebrity ambassadors, Bert Kreischer, Tony Hawk, Wiz Khalifa, you know, Whitney Cummings, you know, Travis Barker, all these people. And, you know, I think we have genuine relationships with them where they really support what we're doing. They like the crazy stuff that we're doing and vice versa. And so it is kind of a mutually beneficial relationship. It's not this, thing where we're just paying a celebrity to hold a product and say, I like this brand. Right. And so I think, and we
said your mission convinced people to take part that otherwise you thought wouldn't a few times. I think that kind of thing's happened, right?
Yeah. And I mean, even like in the thing that is nice is that opens doors is both the brand, but then also our Death to Plastic mission, which, you know, look at productions like TV and movie sets. There's how many bottles of water are used throughout a production. So we've had a lot of opportunities where a lot of productions have adopted Liquid Death on set because they can be recycled, right? And so now suddenly we have all these, you know, people of higher status who are coming in contact, or all these productions that are coming in contact And now it's just easier for us to go and, you know, do something interesting with people because they already like us. It's not like we're fighting an uphill battle, right?
They're approaching you now rather than you approaching them going, yeah, we can do something really fun. I love that. And I do think that's part of the smartness of, let's say, your initial distribution strategy, which seemed to find really interesting mechanisms, kind of the closest analog is like Red Bull 20 years ago, right?
We started a lot by being in, you know, bars and music venues and stuff like that, rather than, you know, just trying to be on a grocery store shelf, which, you know, I think established kind of what we were doing from the beginning.
Yeah. I mean, the innovation in product is, it's a can that looks like a beer essentially, or something like that, that we can carry without any kind of whatever seeming social stigma that may be associated with not wanting to drink all the time, whatever that might currently be in whichever youth culture we're talking about. But like, so, I mean, the can and the design really pops. But speaking of distribution, so yeah, there's some, you know, clubs and sports, that makes obvious place. The set stuff is incredibly smart. I love that. But like, how did you get into all major retailers in America? Like, that seems like a very difficult thing to do with that TV spend historically, right? Isn't that one of the points of the trade, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, there are people that can speak much more eloquently to that than I can, certainly. But I think, you know, when I started almost exactly 3 years ago, we were just getting into our first retail door. And now we're across about 120,000 doors worldwide, across US, UK, Ireland, Australia, New Zealand, and a couple other little ones peppered in there. So we've really, I mean, the explosive growth has happened because, you know, I think it's, on the surface, liquid death is a tough sell. And then but at a certain point, it's hard to argue with the momentum that we've had. And so, it's really helped. It's helped open a lot of doors. And, you know, obviously the retailers are extremely happy with how it's been performing.
I have been talking to some people doing, you know, let's call it research for the sake of my professional acumen. And, you know, I found it interesting that some people I've mentioned the brand to, I've only really encountered it at venues, festivals, and in supermarkets and that kind of thing. And I wonder how, I mean, I'm an extremely online, extremely ad person. I am extremely aware of nearly everything you do because that's what I do, right?
Yeah.
But how very online do you consider your audience to be? And how do you think about your audience beyond that? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think. We, you know, we have a massive, like I said, massive online following. As you say, we have amazing way to reach people through, you know, strategic partnerships with live events and venues and that sort of thing. The nice thing, I think, is that the thing I love about someone being introduced at a venue is, I always say it's like you experience the entire brand within about 5 minutes, where you get the can. What we hear all the time is people always are like, you know, I thought it was an energy drink, I thought it was hard seltzer, I thought it was whatever. And then you get handed it for the first time and you're like, that's not what I ordered. And then they're like, oh, it's just water. Oh, and there's this like crazy mental flip because a lot of people have either seen it, but they haven't fully dove into it yet. And so there's this like real like, brain melting 180 that kind of happens when you have that first sip. And then, you know, you're like, oh, it's water. And then you're like, oh, it's really cold, refreshing water in a can. And then you look on the side and we have the funny, you know, the story on the side, and you're like, oh, and it's funny water. And then you finish it and then you go to throw it away and you're like, oh, and now I recycle it. And you go to the recycling bin. And so you have, and you're like, oh, wow. And it's water that isn't in a plastic bottle. And so you have the full brand experience in 5 minutes or so. And then at a certain point, like you, once you're exposed to it, we have an insane body of work, I would say, that we've developed over the last, you know, 5 or so years. And so then once you dive into it, you've just gone down this crazy rabbit hole of everything we've done. And that's where people really, that's where you see people like really the fandom explodes. So yeah, it kind of every step, there's all these different ways into what we're doing. And then once you find it, you can kind of have your own relationship with with it, whether it's like Ultra Fandom and the 300 plus people who have gotten tattoos of our logo on their bodies, or whether it's, you know, a lighter casual user who just loves something cold at a venue, you know?
So you sort of traded time spent in large multi-agency meetings, negotiating, you know, every single word in the script for what appears to be a truly punishing production schedule. So to your point, you make a vast amount of work.
Yeah.
At least it seems that way to me. Do you think it is? Because it seems like a great deal of work is coming out all of the time.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we just launched something today, and I was on with the team as we were pressing the go button. And I was like, oh man, it feels like it's been a long time since we launched something. And it had been 3 weeks, I think, since the last thing we put out.
It's amazing. I mean, as an ultra runner, do you think you have incredible stamina to just go through? Because production is hard, right? It's a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think we really do work to make it as easy on ourselves and the people involved. And even when we pitch celebrities or brands on stuff, our goal is always to make it minimum friction for everyone involved. And I think because we realize if we make it hard on anybody, it's going to be hard on everybody. And so we just want to be a company that is really kind to our people and kind to people we work with. And that's a real core value. And I know if we do that, it will pay dividends on the ultimately on how happy and creative people are. And even I'm really proud of this, even on sets that we wrap, and the crew there is like, man, I love working on jobs with you guys. They're so fun. And you guys are so chill. We had someone the other day, we were collaborating with, and they were there and they were like, man, this is my favorite shoot I've ever been on in my entire career. And like, I want that ease, because if we don't have that, it becomes very hard on ourselves. And so I talk a lot about that too. It's like, just across agencies and brands and marketing departments, we have to find ways. We're making it too hard on ourselves. And it doesn't have to be as hard as we're all making it. And I hope that's a prime example, because I think quality of life, I don't know. I grew up at Crispin in the days where like there was the sweatshop cover on Creativity magazine.
Literally, I remember it well, indeed.
Yeah. And so that's like a core part of my personality, or like ultra running, right? Like I'm super into working as hard as humanly possible to get the thing that we want to do. But at a certain point, we have to like figure out, you learn that you can do it in a way where you're not redlining at all times. And both in running and in, you know, creative that we do, it's like, you got to operate right under that and find ways to do it. Ultra running, it's all about being as efficient as you possibly can, because you have to last 100 miles from here to the finish line. So how can we make everything we do super smooth so that we can get to that end result that we want without redlining?
I am now going to open a can of Liquid Death Mango Chainsaw.
Excellent. And
experience the fizzy, refreshing deliciousness. Oh, it's great stuff, isn't it? Oh. So you did a lot with water. Is water wet?
I think so, for the most part.
So things in water are wet. Things out of water, they get wet. But water itself, can it be wet?
We have the wettest water, I would say. I know people say you can't distinguish water, but I do think our water is wetter than most.
Feels very wet to me. Mm-hmm. Is death dead?
It can be, but also sometimes it's not. Look at Neil Patrick Harris. That guy came back from, that guy was nowhere. And then suddenly he was in Harold and Kumar, and then just totally reborn his career. So I'd say that guy's born again.
We love it. We love a good comeback. Then is Liquid Death wet or dead?
It's wet death, I would say.
Thank you. what do you, so like a lot of your work seems to, okay, let's talk about today's work, actually. Yeah. Today's work appears to be a very good example of today's launch, I believe. It's a golf campaign with Bad Birdie, with a particular kind of golf club. Do you want to tell us about that for a second?
Sure. Yeah. We partner with Bad Birdie. We have a whole collection of golf gear that they design. That's great. Polos, hats, t-shirts. And then also we created the Euro Club, we did not create it. We actually, the Euro Club is a product that actually is a real product that existed for many years. It was actually on Shark Tank.
Really?
developed by a real urologist.
Wow. Okay.
And we contacted him and asked if he would be willing to create a Liquid Death and Bad Birdie edition of the club, which he graciously allowed us to license. And then we made an ad. And the Euro Club it's exactly what it sounds like. It's a golf club with a hollowed out reservoir and a twist top tip that you can relieve yourself into if you've had one too many Liquid Deaths or other beverages on the golf course. As you know, 18 holes is a long time. Yep. And if you're drinking Liquid Death, as we actually see a lot of golfers really enjoy Liquid Death, you're pretty much just running to the woods. So this is a discreet way to pee into a hollowed out golf club.
So it encapsulates a lot of the things I love about your work. It has, you know, an insight about a specific segment, audience, community, something really germane to, you know, golfers, especially older men golfers. We have our particular needs and prostate, so on. But it also, like, you used to talk a lot about your show, your work being episodes of this ongoing Liquid Death story show, maybe TV show, the writer's room sense. And I love that thought. Increasingly, it feels like you're doing drops. I'm wearing my hilarious satirical t-shirt about that to some degree, because like these limited edition, you know, products, they come out with a campaign, a concept, and then like, a very clear community, and then a bunch of drops. I mean, do you feel, to me, the closest thing that I can think of as to what you guys now do, apart from maybe really good old Crispin work back in the day when you were doing that, is Mischief. Not wanting to overuse Mischief as a kind of, they are very good at fame and attention generation. They seem to be very, very good at it in a way that you guys are. Do you feel a kinship with the way they approach the work?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, we've chatted with those guys a couple times. We actually sent some Liquid Death to one of their openings, one that they were doing. I mean, I think there's a number of people that we look around and feel like we're kind of peers in a sense with. I think they're great at developing, you know, intensely conceptual products. And they're, you know, everything they're doing is an art piece. I think we sometimes talk about Liquid Death as kind of an elaborate art piece as well. Yeah, I think, you know, we certainly feel kindred spirits. I think we lean probably more into the like comedy video aspect of ours. But the way I like to think of it is I've kind of, I don't know if I coined it. I think I did. But this term like 3D humor, where the fun thing about us is it's not just that we made a ha-ha funny video. It's like, oh no, they're real.
You follow through.
Yeah, you can really buy this golf club. We really stole Tony's blood. We really took Steve-O's hair and made it into voodoo dolls that were put together by a weird warlock. You know, like we had... It's this thing that you can touch and feel. And man, one of the best examples actually is we teamed up with Burton to do the Death Trap, which was a snowboard that had no camber. So it's basically entirely flat and it's shaped like a coffin. And it was like, the ad was like, literally don't ride this, you will die. And even though the lawyers were like, you can't let anybody ride this. So the whole commercial was like, literally, please do not ride this. I think it was like $325, I want to say, was the price tag. And it sold out in 25 minutes. So meaning all these people bought a snowboard for hundreds of dollars you literally couldn't ride.
It's art.
Yeah, exactly. It is. It's a humor piece. It's, you know, it's something that you want to be involved with, a piece of pop culture, piece of humor, in a way, like I say, in a way that, you know, as you know, we love sketch comedy. I mean, there's so many amazing, you know, I Think You Should Leave and SNL and all kinds of amazing stuff out there, but they make the fake commercials for the fake products, but we make a real commercial for a real product.
Yeah.
And you can really walk into a store and see Liquid Death sitting on the shelf. So I think that's this weird blending of like real world meets fantasy world. And that's kind of the fun line we're always towing with Liquid Death is this thing real or not? And oh my God, it is real.
That's what I love so much about it, I think, is that, you know, I used to be into this thing I used to call brand actions, but I mean, like, do actual things in the world and then tell people about it. Don't just pretend to have done stuff. That seems to me a very cool way of, like, I don't know, being, I don't know, interesting. And as the world gets more virtual and more social and digital, the realness of your work, I think, comes through the screen, which is kind of, it makes it different, right? It's not just, I'm not even going to mention AI. I don't want to talk about it. Is that okay?
Yeah, cool. I would prefer if we don't. I mean,
that'd be perfect. Okay, good.
You did right now, but it's fine.
Oh, yeah. So obviously, when you create work to be funny and attract attention, you must be thinking about audience and some degree community and like the insight that you have about people hating ads, that sort of meta level thing. But
yeah,
are there any other kind of things you build into the system of creative or communications distribution that are designed to help PR pick up things, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, I think we've done it enough. And this goes back to the question of like, wow, you guys do a lot of stuff. That wasn't a question, that was a statement. But that statement of, wow, you guys do a lot of stuff. And yeah, the only reason why we've learned over time is because now we have the instincts when we do something new. We're like, oh, if we do this, this is going to really help it. Or if I know I'm going to get this one shot in here, that's going to help this thing really travel. Or this one line that I'm going to throw in to the script. We've done it enough that we've gotten much more versed in those things. And I probably won't tell all our secrets.
No, fair enough.
But what I mean is like you have to just practice that stuff, right? You have to go, you have to make a lot of stuff to understand which stuff is going to work, and not just writing stuff. It's not like, again, going back to the agencies, it's like not just building decks and writing scripts. Everybody has to make stuff, but because you only learn the most by making things, then making another thing the next time, and you've learned from that last experience. So I think there should be more importance on making as much stuff as possible rather than making the biggest, most integrated thing that we possibly can. I think that's just such old school dinosaur thinking in the modern marketing age.
So it's a sort of human approach to attention, and you have a community, this 9 million kind of follower base who are going to get your stuff first. I see your stuff immediately on LinkedIn because that's, I guess, the primary social network now for middle-aged men.
Whatever this is.
Yeah, exactly. Whoever we are, whatever that is. But like, I wonder, thinking about attention online, right? There's obviously a kind of interruptive barrier called the algorithm. And Mr. Beast famously has teams of people obsessing over every kind of possible optimization tweak to every algorithm on every platform he can possibly imagine and find himself, blah, blah. Do you even think about that stuff? Or are you more just thinking about your community, what works with people?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we definitely, you know, again, we have gotten pretty good understanding of how tweaking our content to meet the moment and meet the platform. We've gotten good at that. But also the really funny thing is we've been told by the platform sometimes, like, because we've talked to them and, you know, asked for advice on things, and they're like, honestly, we would recommend doing the opposite of what you guys are doing, but the thing you're doing is performing insanely well. And so we can't tell, we think you should just keep doing the thing. So the example is like on TikTok, it's always like, oh, make it feel really organic. And, you know, just buy someone real, make it feel real and shot on a phone. And then you look at our stuff, and the stuff that performs best are these like overly produced fake parody ads. And they're like, we would literally never tell anybody to ever do that, but somehow your stuff garners millions of views doing it. So they just are kind of like, just keep doing what you're doing.
Is this partially the curse of best practices, just normalizing everything down to kind of homogenous blandness that fits within the right pixel ratio of right platforms, essentially?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, God, the one thing that's really funny to me now is on TikTok. I just seen stuff the other day. This like the TikTok little like finger thing, and it's seeped down into every single person is doing that now, or people watching movies with the subtitles on.
Yeah.
I just think like you look at all the stuff that's happening and how best practices or all these, it's kind of seeping across culture. And for us, we've always wanted to cut counter to culture and particularly marketing. So I think doing something that's the opposite of what is expected is also going to perform. If you're just chasing,
Which is the essence of what I think strategy apparently was and creative, right? Like, here's what everyone should do. Now do the opposite of that. Otherwise, you're doing literally what everyone else is doing. Isn't that?
I mean, I think our founder Mike has a really good perspective on this, which is, if you're just trying to chase success, all you're doing is replicating something that's been done before and, kind of have moderate success. But if you're actually starting from this place, if we always talk about like, what's the dumbest thing we could do? If you're starting from that place where you're just freeing yourself to entertain things that have never been entertained before, that's where like truly innovative ideas and practices come from, is because you're starting from a place that no one who is trying to be successful would allow them to start to or allow themselves to start there, right? So again, putting water in a can, people always would say, we'd get on calls and people are like, that no one's ever going to drink water out of an aluminum can. That's insane. No one will ever do that. And as I, that's how it started when I joined. And then a year and a half in, we'd get on calls and people are like, oh, water in a can. That's so obvious. I wish I had thought of that. And
And yet, like
everything is so stupid until one day it's not, right?
100%, yes. And
So
you're beginning to get
that's kind of
invitations.
what we're operating on, is that kind of notion, I guess, is like, what can we do that feels so stupid and counterintuitive, but we know is actually brilliant, and we're going to put it out there, and then people catch up to it, or they catch up to the humor, they catch up to whatever we're doing, right?
Absolutely, yes. And I think we're going to sort of have a couple more questions. Hopefully we have time for that. I think that we are. I forgot to set the timer, to be honest, but that's just me, isn't it?
We got all day.
Oh, speaking of, so all these merchandise opportunities, I mean, promotional products and so on, the drops, Mischief kind of moved into that and then started just selling a lot of shoes. You've obviously expanded into this excellent green tea, agave, and nutraceutical enhanced vitamin beverage line, very much within the liquid death thing. You didn't call it water, so all liquid is your domain in theory. And you've got the death dusts, electrolyte dust for the water. Is there any other thoughts, at least, or germs of ideas of like product lines that may extend? That just feels that your brand has stretch to me.
I mean, absolutely. I mean, I can't talk about anything we're developing here. This would
And I wouldn't ask you. That would be
no
absolutely
no offense.
no, don't answer.
But yeah, I mean, as we say, we're like, a healthy beverage platform. And so there's a lot of, obviously there's more interesting stuff that we are interested in doing. I think also, as you said, we have a whole merch line, which is its own and business essentially. And then also,
Supply chain, whole different supply chain, different kind of
and we have, massive fans under that as well. And then also, ultimately we want to be an entertainment company, and that's how we see ourselves as well. And so we dropped the Adventures of Murder Man trailer that we're trying to get picked up as a real show.
I may have missed that in my research. Can you speak to that for a second?
Yeah, so we created a trailer for this animated show called The Adventures of Murder Man, which is our mascot, which is
Yes. Sorry,
yes.
I did
Yeah,
see
yeah.
that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
And so we are we're working on, getting that picked up and turned into a legitimate program, not as an advertising vehicle, as like, we just want to make something entertaining and funny. And it happens to have a guy with a liquid death can for a head, but it's not like an ad, right? We're just making a funny show because we have the people Will Carsola is our creative director here, and he had a long time show on Adult Swim. So he wrote and directed that.
William Street, amazing production. I mean, William Street had the probably highest hit rate production.
And we worked with Titmouse on that. And so we're working on, how do we develop this property? I think we've got plenty of aims on other stuff that we want to do from an entertainment perspective. So I think, the possibilities are fairly limitless because we, again, we're a healthy beverage brand, but also this entertainment brand. And so anywhere, there's just a lot of places that we can go. And if you look at the span of the products we make, I mean, we make everything from pint glasses to water bottles to beach chairs to I can't talk to it, but there's another project coming up that if it goes through, an entertainment thing that I am, it's going to be wild if it happens. So, it's kind of limitless because we're just a humor brand, and that's, at the core,
I sort of love that. I mean, there's something about something of, and I don't mean to be either flattering or dismissive of the Maximum Effort Ryan Reynolds kind of flavor, character. You know, just the ability to bring the fourth wall down and speak to advertising as a thing, which I find very pleasing. Last couple, I think maybe we'll squeeze something in. The collabs, especially the entertainment collabs, obviously bring you to a different audience, right? That's kind of how collabs essentially work to some degree.
Yeah,
but the stuff with The Deep felt particularly deep without being facile. Because The Boys and you guys have such a strong kind of intersectional comedic kind of thing. How did that come about? And like any tea on The Deep?
Yeah. So we actually did something with them 2 years ago for season two, or between season two and season three. And yeah, that was a partnership that they came to us with. We love, obviously, just on a personal level, love that show, love everybody over there. And I think it goes back to that thing that I was talking about before, which is this melding of like real world and fantasy and fake world. And is this real? And The Boys has done such a great job of being very real, but very satirical. And again, like, I think Liquid Death exists within that sensibility. And so we always talk about this. It's like, we love properties, IP, where it's always living on the cusp of that because that's how, so we like to kind of move into that world and treat that world like it's real. We're not going to use it as like this vehicle to, slap somebody's logo on and be like, get the boys' happy meal at blah, blah, blah. It's not like that. It's like, we want to make something that treats their world as if it's the real world and vice versa. And so yeah, that was great. And it was very fun to be able to write for, characters that we love. Like, that's always kind of cool, to get to do. And, I'm stoked on that one. And that thing just blew up. I think it's like, I want to say it's like almost like 23 million views just on Instagram alone now. Which is wild.
No, it's incredible. I mean, yeah, again, I love the show very much, but the way you did it was so nice. And again, the message is there. And I guess I'll end with that, which is just that, like, plastic recycling is a scam, right? It just is. We know that it's non-profitable. No one really does it. And yet we still pretend that that's okay. And it's like, you're doing important Lord's work here, whilst at the same time entertaining at least a lot of us. So I can only thank you for that, I suppose.
We're trying to have fun, like I said, I think it's this brand that is built on all kinds of things that are important to us. I think like that kind of singular focus that brands have had, where it has to be like an easy thing. Our stuff is, you can laugh at it at, like I said, you can laugh at like the funny physical humor, but then there's like a social commentary involved, and we have this mission to give people healthier options. And there's this Death to Plastic initiative. There's all these different, and there's this like marketing self-loathing involved in it as well, right? And so
that's, I think it feels so much that,
yeah, you can, I don't know. I mean, I don't mean this in a self-aggrandizing way. Like, I'm as big of a fan of what we're doing as anyone else, because I genuinely enjoy what we get to do. And I know everybody else does here too. And we're just trying to put stuff out. I mean, like, we talk about this a lot, but at the end of the day, our number one goal is just to be the best thing someone sees that day. And like, it's such a simple mission. And if the thing we're doing isn't honoring that and isn't pushing us towards that, then we either don't need to do it or we need to rethink what we're doing. And so that kind of guiding light is what, you know, in the marketing department and beyond, that's like all we're trying to do. It's not harder than that.
I mean, it's much, much harder than it seems, but it's very done effortlessly. At least it seems that way. Production all looks amazing. And I guess, yeah, that's it really. I think there's something really powerful in, I guess, serious stupidity. If you want to get a tension framework in a Crispin sort of way. But there is something really powerful in that mode. It's not silliness for the sake of surreality. It's not scolding or trying to tell me to recycle if I'm a large plastic manufacturer and I'm like, why should I be fixing your problems that you created for us and so on. So I think there's something lovely in that. And yes, we like to say at Genius Deals, it won't be any good if it isn't any fun. And it really seems clear that you guys are having a lot of fun and it is very good. So Andy Pearson, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate you. And it's lovely to see you after all this time.
Yeah, man. Thank you so much. It's really good to see you too.